your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This podcast was brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
This is the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
I'm Dylan, and this week we're talking about decks of the summer. Decks that were hot, that decks did really well, some decks that maybe not so hot, did not so super well in the summer of 2024.
This is kind of the end of summer at this point, so.
I guess so, yeah. Mid-August, is this the end of summer?
By the time this comes out, it'll be much more towards the end of August.
Okay, so September 1st is like the first day of fall for me. I don't think that's actually true, but for me, that's when it is.
That's how it works, because the range that we're looking at right now is from January 1st up until today.
So not even just the summer, just the year so far.
Oh, I meant to say June. What did I say?
You said January. So yes, the summer.
I always get June and January mixed up.
They're 6 months apart, right? June is the halfway point?
It's the J. It's the J. Yeah. That throws me off.
I'm already seeing Halloween stores opening up, which means that summer is at an end. So I think this is a good time to have this conversation.
I think so too. Yeah. So we got a couple decks that stood out to me in particular. We'll talk about some of the best decks that performed too.
Are any of them Simic Birds?
Some of them are Simic Birds.
Excellent.
We also have a couple decks that were disappointments of the summer too. Figured we should highlight them because negative content gets clicks.
Sure, yeah, I'm into it.
All right, so let's take it away. First of all, are there any decks that you think, like before we really get into it, what do you think has been on your mind for this summer?
I don't know this list that you have. You've concocted the list, so I'm coming into this raw. This is just my gut reaction. I think Magda and Nadu had a pretty good summer. I think Tivit and Atraxa had a pretty bad summer. That's going to be my hot take, my pick at the beginning. 2+2-.
I think that's a great starting point. And I think that's kind of what we're all feeling coming into this episode is that we've been hearing a lot about Nadu in the 2 months that it's been around. We've been talking a lot about Magda on the show.
It's true.
Certainly. And I think we're going to really kind of define how well these decks actually have done today. Do you want to start with Nadu then?
Let's do it, yeah. Let's start with the big one.
All right. So Nadu, this really has been Nadu's summer. It's gotten four tournament wins
already. Wow.
Yeah, four tournament wins, including Gold Sabertooth and nice. Sam Black, yes. Who yeah. have wow. won tournaments with this deck, which is wild. Sam Black's win rate was 71.4%.
Oh, wow.
Which is wild. Yeah, the deck overall's top 16 conversion rate ended up being 32%.
Now, conversion rate means percentage of decks that entered the tournament versus got to the top 16. That's what conversion rate is.
Correct. So that means that 32% of Nadu decks made it to the semifinals of their tournament.
Right. It doesn't mean that they necessarily won the tournament, but they made a top 16. They did well enough that it's measurable, we think.
Exactly. Yeah. And this, I don't think, is really a surprise to anyone. We've been hearing it all summer. Everyone's also just kind of talking about how they can deal with this bird, too. And I also did see that we might be getting some news from the RC about this bird and some their thoughts on the bird coming up soon.
Are there any thoughts yet? I saw something that Jim posted about it, and it was clarifying our thoughts on the bird or something, but I didn't see the original thoughts on the bird.
I thought he was clarifying the thoughts on the stickers, is that they will be doing some kind of an action on the stickers, but then there's also going to be another piece that actually might have come out this podcast release week, but we record a week behind. So
okay, so they may have said something about Nadu already.
They might have said something about Nadu.
If they ban Nadu already, that would be really quick, I feel like, compared to a lot of other things that they've let around.
Well, it might not be a ban. It could just be, hey, we heavily have our eye on it, and just explaining why they have their eye on it. And if it ends up not being a commander that's seen in a lot of casual games, I don't think it's something that's going to end up getting banned.
The main issue that it has for getting banned is like the Paradox Engine deal with it, is that not that it's really powerful per se, but it allows you to very easily take a 20-minute turn kind of out of nowhere. All you have to do is sneeze and Nadu is going to do 1,400 different things. And having that in your command zone, that is a little bit of a red flag. We've said before that I don't know that it's ban-worthy just yet. I want to see a lot more data with it, but we're starting to get to that point where we're getting enough data. Nadu's good. It's a tier one deck.
It's definitely good. Yeah, because this has been enough time for decks to change their 99s to kind of make sure that they're prepared for Nadu. And even if that's going on and Nadu's still able to win tournaments, I think that's something I would still like a little bit more time to see. But I can understand why there is a lot of rush to get this answer here to figure out what we do.
Plus, I just like playing with and against powerful decks. Stuff, like, it's fun. Like, yeah, okay, if the Nadu player doesn't know what they're doing and they take 45 minutes, I understand how that can be annoying. But for me, I like to be actively involved. It's kind of fun to like watch how the Nadu deck goes. I don't know. It's a powerful card. I know that it's powerful and it is ban worthy, that's for sure. I'm not sold yet, though. I don't think I'm all the way there. I'm okay with Nadu still for now.
Paradox Engine is a colorless engine that could go in literally every deck, whereas this is something that kind of has to be at the helm of your commander deck. So I don't think it's necessarily as egregious, but I understand where that comparison comes into.
The conversion rate is pretty good. How does it compare to the other decks of the format right now?
That's a great question. It's actually the second highest conversion rate that we'll be talking about.
So that's for decks that are specific to this summer. So that it is pretty high. But what about compared to like the rest of the decks? Can we check that real quick? Like, compared to all the decks, where does it sit right now?
That's what I'm looking at.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's what confused me, is I'm looking at how all of the decks have been doing all summer. Maybe that's why I said something really confusing.
No, okay, I think I'm understanding.
I'm comparing it against all of the decks that got entered in tournaments. It still has the second highest conversion rate.
It still has the second highest conversion rate behind Blue Farm.
Behind Blue Farm, yeah. That still had more entries and more top 16s, but because its number of entries is significantly higher than the difference between the top 16s between the two decks, Blue Farm's conversion rate came out to be 26.42.
So it's actually much lower than that is.
A decent amount lower.
So what's the deck that is higher than Nadu?
The deck that's higher than Nadu is actually the one that I'm most excited to talk about. Thrasios Vial Smasher.
Oh, weird.
Now, you might not like this because there's only 26 entries. However,
okay. For me, 30 is the number. We need
correct.
30 entries.
Yes. However, I think that this is new enough for just it being the summer that I think that it's enough of an anomaly that we should still be taking a look at it.
26 can round up to 30 for here.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll round it up. Yeah. There were 7 decks that made top 16 and 4 of them made the top 4. 2 of them looked like they were actually in the same pod.
What kind of deck is this? Is it just like traditional Thrasios Vial Smasher? Smasher like Sands White good stuff, or are we playing like the Curiosity things also?
It is actually more all in on Thrasios and really is only playing Vial Smasher for the colors.
Interesting.
Last time I played this commander pairing, I still loved playing like Keen Sense and Curiosity with Vial Smasher, but I think that comes up so infrequently that it's just not worth playing those cards in your deck.
This is not the Curiosity control of 2016.
No, it's not. It's not. This is instead like an all-in infinite mana deck. You're playing every infinite mana combo that's good. Dockside Teemer Sabertooth, Chthonian Nightmare Dockside Extortionist, Hullbreaker Horror Loops, and then you also have Kinnan Basalt Monolith to go for as well. You are not playing ad nauseum, but you're just playing like every other good card in this color combination. Very few mana dorks. It's just Birds of Paradise, Deathrite Shaman, Ignoble Hierarch, and Delighted Halfling.
I feel like that's the new core now. That grouping. The two toughness ones and then the Hierarchs.
But I think the other thing that really stands out about this deck is that it's playing a lot of ways to try to win at instant speed. It not only has Born Upon the Wind, but it's also playing Valley Flood Caller as well.
This might be the good Valley Flood Caller deck.
This seems like it could be. Now, because Hullbreaker Horror has Flash, you can go for infinite mana at instant speed with that loop. With Valley Floodcaller, which is really nice, actually, I think.
Yeah, especially with all of your combos are permanent based, so you can cast all of them through Valley Floodcaller because they're all dockside loops, right?
Oh, it's just non-creature spells that you can cast.
Non-creature spells. It's specifically bad, actually. Never mind. Forget what I just said.
Yeah, that's why I like the dockside line, the Kinnan Basalt Monolith line. I mean, you could flash in Basalt Monolith at instant speed, which is still nice if you already have Kinnan.
Okay.
Chthonian Nightmare you can flash in, but you can't loop dockside and recast dockside. That way, but that's why like the Hullbreaker Horror combo works specifically.
Okay, so it's just a whole bunch of extra ways to win at instant speed that feels extra important in tournaments nowadays, especially with tournaments getting close to time. It's a good way to win on top of the stack. Someone feels like they got it at the very end. You can win right on top of them at the end. That feels very important.
I misspoke earlier. I said there were only 7 top 16s. There were 10 top 16s, actually.
10's a lot.
10 top 16s for 26 entries. That's 38.5% that rounds up to.
Wow. Yeah, that is a pretty high conversion
rate. That's a really high conversion rate. And again, it's a small sample size because it's only like these couple of events that we're actually seeing this deck at. But this is enough where I think this could push it to be something more prominent in the format. You get to play Notion Thief. You get to play Seedborn Muse. Like, you're really maximizing on all of these really good late game cards. You have enough early game interaction where you can survive those really fast decks that are coming back right now and then power through to the late game and win then.
It seems like a deck that is primed to win in the super grindy Rhystic Study world. Just kind of grind harder than everyone else with Seaborn Muse.
And it plays Fire Covenant too, which is a card that we haven't seen in a little while.
But I play that in Blood Pot still. Card's great.
Love Fire Covenant right now. Yeah, but that's the one that I'm the most impressed with.
Yeah, I like that deck a lot. That seems neat. I don't know if that's a deck that I would play. I think, and I am probably with a lot of CDH players, that I'm sick of Thrasios. I just don't want to play fucking Thrasios anymore. If it's the best deck, sure, yeah, whatever. I'll give it a try. But I just have no real interest in trying out another Thrasios deck. I've been there, done that for so long. I feel like Timna, for some reason, I'm not as tired of because I just Timna's better. But for some reason, Thrasios, unless the deck truly is like something insane, it's going to be a great strategy for somebody else, not for me.
I definitely feel that. I have played every single Thrasios deck that, and every single color combination that you can with Thrasios besides Simic. And I'm ready to move on, I think, yeah.
Let's move on. Should we talk about another hot deck of the summer?
Let's talk about another hot deck. Yuriko is another one that's way up at the top of my hotness scale right now.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of extra lists for Yuriko recently.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's really because of the number of cards it's gotten recently.
Yeah.
That not only, A, are more people willing to play Yuriko now, because it's gotten new tools, more people want to play the new tools. So I think that it's going to see a unusually large number of
players.
Exactly, yeah.
The modal DFs, the MDFCs, the modal...
Modal double-faced cards?
Modal double-faced cards. The spells that are lands in the back are so particularly great for Yuriko. One, because obviously you want the big mana value on as many things as possible for Yuriko so you can actually kill them with damage, which happens a lot. But also because you're not playing Ad Nauseam, so you don't care about the high mana value of all of your things. It doesn't matter. The three life that it deals you to come in untapped also doesn't matter because you're not really using your life total. So I think Yuriko's got a ton of stuff recently. I have made a whole bunch of updates to my Yuriko list. I'm playing like 22 actual lands at this point.
Dude, that's what I have here too. 22 lands. You have so many MDFCs that do this for you.
You have like 10 of them at this point that are all like close enough to playable that Yuriko's trying them all out. And I think like they're just a great shell for Yuriko is all of those lands. The deck is great. It seems very powerful right now. Just the fact that you can like lay back, attack your opponents, deal them a bunch of damage, draw cards without actually having to make a move makes Yuriko so strong right now.
Yeah, you get consistent card advantage while you're also completely putting the whole table on a clock. And exactly as you said, the MDFCs that it got recently between Sink into Stupor and Fell the Profane being not only damage when you flip them off Yuriko, but also potential removal for when you need them to be, also feels really good. You do get to play Hydroelectric Specimen too, which I feel like is more likely just the land, but Yuriko does have a target on her back a lot of the times too. So I think that at least having some sort of a like deflecting SWAT in your deck, at least another one, because you do play Miscast and stuff like that.
Realistically, it's a land more often, 90% of the time, I feel like. But yes, the fact that you are also able to, sometimes your land can redirect a removal spell is fantastic.
And you also get to play both of the new flares from Modern Horizon.
And they're good here.
They're really good. You have so many one mana spells that you can sacrifice to cast Flare of Denial or Flare of Malice, and your commander will always cost 2 mana to Ninjutsu back in. So it doesn't even matter if you end up sacrificing Yuriko, because at that same turn that she sacrificed to Flare of Malice to get blockers out, you can still attack and get her back into play.
You can ninjutsu her in, you can sacrifice her right away, you can ninjutsu her back in if you have more mana from this in the same combat. There's a lot of cool tricks that you can do with this deck.
Absolutely wild, yeah. And then Mockingbird is a new card from Bloomburrow.
Yeah, clone is so good here.
Tell me more about it.
The fact that it's just like a flying man on its own if you need it to be, but then also can copy a Dockside Extortionist or anything like that. One thing that I wanted to mention about this card that we didn't mention in the set review is the fact that not in this deck, but Ranger Captain can find it if you're playing both blue and white.
Oh, yeah.
So Ranger Captain being able to find either a clone in this or draw an Esper Sentinel is huge game that I didn't really realize at first. So for that reason, that Mockingbird card is way better than I thought. But in Yuriko specifically, it being another flying creature also is just super crucial.
Yeah, so those are really the standout things that I see from these new Yuriko decks that are popping up that really, I totally understand, make more people want to play this deck because it definitely did get a huge huge shot in the arm recently.
And I think it also plays like a strategy that doesn't see any other play in CDH. It plays like the Delver decks of Legacy and Vintage and any of these tempo-y blue decks. It's the closest thing we have to that. Najila can kind of play like that, but Najila often just plays like a go-wide combo deck. Yuriko, you're actively protecting the queen. You're actively looking to, more often than not, just beat your opponents with flips from Yuriko. Like, that happens, I would say, probably more often than Thassa's Oracle for a decent chunk of Yuriko players. It's just easier to never actually go for anything. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to worry about someone counterspelling your Thassa's Oracle if you just reveal off Yuriko every time and hit 5, 6, 7 damage. So.
Exactly, yeah. And your cards like Commandeer are doing everything that your deck wants to do.
Yeah, stuff like Commandeer is also super huge. You get to play these, like, super big splashy spells that no other deck can play. It's, like, another great reason why, like, this deck is just so fun, and I'm glad to see it play a lot more. I've been really, really thinking about putting it back together. I want to revisit Best Kindred in CDH. I feel like we've been thinking about this a lot recently. I would love to do it. Like, Yuriko's got so much gas recently. Magda is a really good deck that we're probably going to talk about in a second that's playing like dwarves. We got dwarves. We got ninjas. Malcolm is really good for pirates, I feel like. Dude, we could choose anything for our fourth one. Najila for warriors, or I don't know, whatever.
I think we still have a lot of options for that.
But that's an aside that I really want to do that at
Elf
some point.
Elf Ball's bad, yeah. Maybe Najila is just the way to go and just say warriors, yeah.
Can we talk about Magda? Are we going to talk about Magda?
Actually, I'll tell you what. Magda is not on the list.
Interesting.
That's of the preconceived list. But I do want to talk about Magda. And the only reason why Magda's not on my list is because its conversion rate for this summer at this point that we're talking about right now is 19.67.
Interesting.
It would round up to 20%, but it didn't get there. So I'm not going to give it the point.
Okay, so it's an honorable mention right now at this point. It did not have the outstanding summer that I thought that it did.
It did not. It had 12 top 16s, but the problem was it had no wins, and it doesn't look like it really had any top fours either.
No wins is a kind of a big thing, because I think just evaluating on conversion rate is kind of, I don't want to say a trap, but like, our goal is winning the tournament. Our goal isn't top 16ing, right? So like, actually, like, which decks won the tournament, I think, is another stat that we should be paying attention to. Stuff like Nadu, like, yes, the conversion rate was higher, but also there was 4 wins. That's like crucial.
Exactly, yeah. So I think that is a really good point, and we'll see we're going to talk about a lot of other decks that did win tournaments instead. Unfortunately, I think Magda just ended up letting me down based on how much I've seen for this deck come out recently.
Roaming Throne was an awesome include to this deck, but it just, I guess, wasn't quite enough to really push it over the top.
Flare of Duplication is the other card that maybe really did help this deck, but otherwise, I do think that the deck maybe got a lot of cards that are just like, okay for Magda. Like, they're pushing into treasures more, but they're not making a lot of, like, Dockside Extortionist level treasure cards. They're making like 5 mana removal spells that will give me maybe 2 treasures, but I had to spend 5 mana on it, which doesn't feel great. So like, I feel like I'm giving up a lot to play other cards to say treasure on them when maybe they're more traditional and established Magda builds are already better.
Yeah, I mean, and being locked in mono red is not nothing. That is like a handicap that you don't have access to a lot of things that other colors have access to. And even when it comes to like new cards, 5 color decks are just going to more often than not have access to more good, powerful cards every set. Whereas Magda is only getting access to the red ones. You know what I mean? So although it is getting some stuff, it's not getting includes at the same rate that other decks are getting.
Yeah, that's very true. I personally was just a little bit disappointed with Magda this summer.
On the side of things.
Yeah, more on the air side of things. Thrasios Rograkh is one that I want to bring up because it did win a tournament.
Okay.
But its final conversion rate ended up only being 19.23%.
Which is also under, we wanted 20%.
I want 20% is what I'm looking at. So this being a little bit under was certainly not as compelling. However, this deck still looks really interesting, and I think that there still is a lot of room to grow with this list, even though it is a Thrasios list, and we were just saying we don't want to play more Thrasios.
Yeah, Rograkh makes it different, though. I feel like Rograkh is a good commander. Rograkh in anything, I think, is a little bit better than we think it is.
Yeah, I think so, too. There's no polymorph in this deck, which is the first thing that I always think of. If you're playing blue Rograkh, you're trying to polymorph it into Hallbreaker Horror and win the game that way, and we've been saying for a long time now, polymorph is a bad strategy to be in.
Yeah, Dockside's just too good. Cannot play Dockside's insane.
Unless you're polymorphing into Dockside, right, there's no reason to do this.
And I could maybe see an argument for that, more than the win condition.
More than the Hallbreaker Horror, yeah. But instead, you just go all in on the creatures that you want to play. The deck that won is playing how many creatures, Dylan?
23?
Exactly right. And some of them are super interesting.
Wait, did I get that right?
You got that totally
right.
That
was just a fucking guess.
That was a great guess, yeah. Sowing Mycosynth. We never talked about this card in the show.
What is this card?
3 and a green for a Devoid Eldrazi Fungus. It's a 3-3. So it's what's a 4-mana 3-3 called? A Hill Giant?
I thought that was a 4-3 as a Hill Giant. No?
No.
No, that would be way too good.
A 4-mana 4-3 was way too good.
That was way too good at the time, yeah. 4-mana 3-3 is a Hill Giant. Yeah, yeah. Right? Yeah, 4-mana 3-3. Yeah, yeah.
But it also has kicker for 1 and a colorless. When you cast this spell, search your library for a land card and put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle. Oh, it doesn't say tapped. Okay. Did you see that?
Untapped, yeah. That's if you spend 6 mana on it?
If you spend 4 mana on it.
Oh, okay.
Search your library for a land card, put it on the battlefield, then shuffle.
Okay.
When you cast a spell, if it was kicked, exile target land.
That your opponent controls, probably.
Well, probably.
Probably.
Yeah. Probably.
It doesn't have flash.
But it's a 4-mana 3-3 that lets you search up any land.
Gaia's Cradle.
So it could get your Gaia's Cradle. It can also get your Manamo for your One Ring. It can also get your Shifting Woodlands.
Sure.
Which I think is a card that is really should be seen a little bit more play. If you can hit Delirium, which means if you're playing a CEDH deck, you should probably be putting Shifting Woodlands in your green ones.
Now, getting the land only happens if you cast the spell. Is that right?
When you cast it.
When you cast it. So you can't tutor for it. That kind of stinks. But okay, still good. Being able to find Gaia's Cradle or Manamo or those other lands that you talked about is very powerful.
What do you mean when you can't tutor for it?
You can't Finale of Devastation for it in order to get the land.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. No, you can't. No. Yeah,
that would be too good.
That would be
interesting.
Probably a little
this
too
card,
good.
I mean, to me, this card doesn't exactly feel like a CDH card. It feels like a lot of mana, 4 mana for that effect. Is that really good? But I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
I think it is kind of interesting. I guess it can also get you Emergence Zone.
Sure.
Maybe that's good.
4 mana is a lot. But I'm playing stuff like Talion in other decks, so if you're imagining that a Gaia's Cradle is going to get you about as much value as like a Talion or something like that, I can
maybe
see that jump.
You know what? The other thing is maybe it's also part of your win condition.
Oh.
If like you don't have Finale of Devastation as you're going through Holebreaker Horror Loops, you're exiling everyone's lands as you're bouncing their permanents back to their hand. So
okay.
Like you still don't win the game that turn, but you're setting yourself up for a win.
Okay, yeah, okay, sure. Is this deck winning with Gaia's Cradle in any way? Is there a Gaia's Cradle win? Or do you need any of the lands to do any of your combos?
There's an Earthcraft in this deck. There are a couple basics in here, too. I am not seeing a spell that, like, combos with Earthcraft that I'm aware of.
Doesn't seem like a card that I would want to play in a CDH deck, but it's super cool to see it doing well in CDH tournaments. Shows that I don't know fucking anything.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of other interesting cards. Ella Domri, Korvac Doll. Do you remember this one from the set review?
It's kind of like a sneak attack almost, sort of.
Yeah, look at the top card of your library. At any time, you can cast creatures from the top of your library. Good thing you're playing 23. And then you can, for a green, tapping it and tapping 2 untapped creatures you control, which your 2 commanders are really cheap and easy to get out and easy to tap then. And then you can reveal a card from your hand or the top card of your library and put it onto the battlefield. So it's just
if
like
it's a creature or any card.
Reveal a creature this way.
Reveal a creature. Okay.
Yeah. So it's between like Holebreaker Horror that you're trying to get. You could get Atali, Primal Conqueror. This is actually like an Atali deck too.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty interesting.
Creature of any color. You could just put a Dockside in if you want.
You could put a Dockside in. You could put a Teferi, Mage of Zalfir in.
Interesting.
Which
oh,
is also very interesting. Yeah.
This is just another way we were talking about earlier about like ways to get instant speed wins out. This deck, I feel like, can do that pretty well, specifically with this card.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's kind of like the 3-mana fairy where it's dangerous, where like if you just pass with it up, you know, other pit players can win with you being the only person that can interact with them. But this being as like an extra way to protect yourself, I think is also really cool.
Should I be playing this Ella Domri in Sisse? What do you have to tap? Any creatures? It and 2 other any creatures?
For a green, tap it and 2 untapped creatures you control.
Interesting. Would that be good in Sisse? You can just put in a creature? Probably
not. How many creatures are you running?
I think less than 23.
Are any of them 7 mana?
No.
I don't know if you need Ella Domri.
Probably not good. It's probably not good. But it itself is a legend, but still probably not good.
It itself is a legend, yeah.
Really good in this deck, though. I think much better in this deck if you're cheating in a big 7-mana creature.
Yeah, I agree. And then you also get to maximize on the new flares, too. Both of your commanders work really well with Flare of Denial and Flare of Duplication since they're both so cheap, so it really feels like nothing to include them. The list that one is also playing Cursed Mirror, too.
Yeah.
Which I love as like more ways to copy Atali and stuff like that.
Dockside.
Plays all of the clones, actually.
Yeah, that's something that Tyler has been on and Kinnan for a while, just playing a whole bunch of extra clones, just because clones are so good right now. Everyone is doing a lot of permanent-based stuff. Everyone's stuff is really good, so getting extra copies of it is often great. I like the move. I'm pushing for as many clones as feel, you know, possible in most of my decks, I feel like.
Yeah, so I feel like this deck is really taking advantage of a lot of the newer cards that have entered CEDH.
Yeah, I agree. So this is another one of the good ones. You said this conversion rate was pretty low, though. It was
the
still
conversion
under
20%. Rate is still under 20, so it's still not exactly where I want to see it.
So it's using good cards, but it's still on the side of things.
Yeah, using good cards, but still a little bit more on the side of thing. Maybe this is like a pilot specific thing, where like maybe certain pilots are going to do really well with this deck. I tend to not be good at playing Rograkh decks in general, so this is not going to be one that I try out, but I'm glad that it's making a little bit more of a showing, at least.
If there were a Thrasios deck that I would play, it'd probably be this one, but I'm still not interested. Moving on.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Kraken Sakushima is the next deck that we're going to talk about.
This deck I have always thought is real, and I think is for real now.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this is another one that hasn't shown up a ton, but when it shows up, it comes to play because it got a 29%
conversion rate.
Yep, it got a 29% conversion rate. It did not get any wins, but it did make it to the top four, though. The main reason why I wanted to highlight it is because it has top 16'd a lot, and because this is another deck that is really benefiting from a lot of new cards, too.
Yeah.
The new Ral Zarek, Monsoon Mage, being able to make all of your instants and sorceries cheaper, and then flipping over into this ultimate, like, Ral Zarek then thing.
I know, it's so flexible. It can be like a storm payoff. It can help you achieve your storm by making your things cheaper. It can do so many different things.
It can be removal to help you keep storming then, too. Yeah.
Yeah, great include for this deck.
The new Ashaline Flame Dancer as well is also phenomenal.
Makes things super confusing because sometimes you'll make clones of the Ashaline too, and then the different Ashalings are on different levels for each one. So one of them is looting and the other one is looting and dealing 2 damage, and then there's another one that's making so difficult to track, but
so good.
The card is just, it goes absolutely insane. The issue that I have with Kraken Sakushima is there are recently a lot of 4 mana sorcery speed creatures that you're trying to play that keep on getting added to the deck. And you can only add so many of those. Stuff like Archmage of Emeratus.
Yep.
And stuff like, I think, Displacer Kitten they still play.
And Stormkiln Artist.
Stormkiln Artist is another one.
So this list that did the best here, according to EDH Top 16, does have just those 4/4 drops. And I feel like...
4/4 drops a lot, though.
4/4 drops is a lot. I feel like you got to cut yourself off there. Does Pinnacle Monk count as...
Ooh,
that's
a land.
That's more than that. That is more of a land.
It's a land that's also a combo piece sometimes. I got beaten with that combo last week at Cloud, or 2 weeks ago.
Oh my God.
Where they were able to, with Twin Flame, get it back and do the whole thing. I don't know it well enough to be able to spew it on the spot right now, but it's a pretty great line.
That seems super sweet. Yeah. This deck has always been strong. And just the extra couple of tools that it got, including new bounce spells like Sink into Stupor and Into the Flood Maw, have really just like helped this deck get to where it needs to be again in the format. Especially now that I think the format is getting a little bit less grindy. We're seeing more fast decks start to take over a little bit more. I can totally see Kraken Sakushima being one of these decks that starts to come back into the fold more.
Yeah, it is certainly a deck that can go really fast if it needs to. So I'm excited to see where it goes going forward. And it's a deck that I'm going to continue having my eye on.
And then the last deck that I want to talk about is another one of these that I'm a little bit less excited about based off everything. But I thought it was interesting that there are... more Grixis Pirates decks that are coming out of the fold a little bit more,
too. Malcolm is good. Malcolm is sneakily good.
Malcolm is good. So Grixis Pirates in particular, Malcolm and Vile Smasher, it was sitting at about a 25% conversion rate to top 16.
I did not think that we'd be talking about Vile Smasher twice in this list.
That's why I wanted to bring this up. Again, this one does have the smaller sample size and does not have the tournament wins. However, However, it's still doing very well. It's still in a great color combination. I just think it's interesting that Vial Smasher is making a significantly larger appearance.
I think it's also important to note the decks that don't have quite as many appearances yet but are still doing well, that even though, yes, it's a small sample size, not that many people are playing it, which means not that many people know how to play against it. If there is something sneaky that you have going on and you can understand the deck pretty well, I think now would be a good time to pick up one of these Vial Smasher decks because although, yes, Grixis, people know what you're doing, obviously, but they're not going to be paying super close attention to you. It's really hard to say when there's a Timna deck and a Vial Smasher deck. It's hard to say, yeah, I'll attack the Vial Smasher deck, right? Like yeah, one of these exactly. is the best deck in the format and one of them is clearly not. So I think you'll get some extra leeway there and just getting just enough extra time where like they're going to attack the Blue Farm player before they attack the Vial Smasher Malcolm player. I think that's going to be really helpful.
And I think this goes back to also maybe the format's speeding up a little bit because this is a worse Grixis combination than the definitely far superior performing Ragrak Silas too. But I think that being able to attack on more creature combos while still being able to go fast is also a really good direction to go into. I think the popularity of this deck is just outshined by how good and established Ragrak Silas already is. But this is still another way that you can go into Grixis, still be really fast, and still like be able to attack the meta maybe a little bit better.
Yeah, when I was playing Chrom and the Pirate Bird,
Francisco,
The games that I had Malcolm in my starting hand, I felt completely unbeatable. You know what I mean? Like, it felt like the best thing ever because, like, you're playing Grixis, but you have, like, the ability to operate on this weird creature access. If you could play, like, three commanders and you could play Francisco, Malcolm, and Breaches as your three partners, that would be the best deck in the format. I truly think that. But, like, because Malcolm with Francisco is really fucking good.
Malcolm, Francisco, Kedis is what I would play. You put those three together.
That's pretty good. Although, it doesn't work extra, I don't think. The Kedis doesn't give extra damages for Francisco, right? It just doubles the amount of damage.
I don't care about Francisco with Kedis. I care about
the extra treasures with Malcolm.
That's enough for me to go, I'd rather do that than play a Breaches.
I could support that for sure. This Vial Smasher Malcolm deck, though, pretty good?
It seems fine. It doesn't look like they've really transformed their decks when there's been new stuff that's come in, because really, I feel like it's Rog'Sai that's really gotten all of the new tools in Grixis and not really any of these other decks. So it still looks pretty standard to me, where like you also have like Viv-Mizzet combos in there. Your main win condition is still like Glinthorn Buccaneer, but there's not like a ton of new cards in this list that are really standing out to me.
Can we talk about Rog'Sai? Because if we're going to talk about a Grixis deck of the summer, if I understand correctly, Rog'Sai has been doing pretty well.
Rog'Sai has been doing pretty well, yeah. Rog'Sai is the number three deck of the summer in terms of top 16s, but its conversion rate ended up being 30.7%, which
is pretty high.
Pretty high, yeah. And it's got four tournament wins this summer, too.
That's pretty good. To me, that's like close to Nadu. I'm thinking of, although the Vial Smasher deck did have a higher win rate since it had less actual decks doing it and less wins, right? How many
wins?
Well,
we should say conversion rate. It had a better conversion rate because it had 10 top 16s for its 26 entries.
But no wins. So for me, that's a big asterisk on that number one.
Yeah.
And Nadu and Rog'Sai, in my heart of hearts, those are the two best decks of the summer, I think.
They both had four wins and have an over 30% win rate. Yeah.
That's pretty substantial evidence.
Which,
right?
Timna Krom had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 wins.
Six wins.
And because of its popularity, had 265 entries, bringing its conversion rate to 26.4%.
Okay, which is still above 25. Still
which
notably
is still
good.
Like way above the benchmark.
Yeah, but I think it's important to note that Blue Farm is the most played deck in the format. I don't actually think it's the best deck in the format.
Like, no?
Yeah, I feel like Rog'Sai and Nadu both have higher win records, they have a higher conversion rate, I should say.
They do have higher conversion rates, yeah.
There are less of them, so I feel like that's even more impressive for some reason, although
there
maybe it's not.
There is the same amount of Nadus as there are Rog'Sais.
I mean less than Timna Krom, but that is interesting that already Nadu has that many pilots.
I knew what you meant, but I just thought that was interesting, that's how far that's climbed up.
And although Timna Krom has more wins, it has more entries, so I don't think that counts the same way. So yeah, for now, I think Rog'Sai and Nadu are better decks.
I guess it depends on what you think is the best, because if we are going by how many tournaments that they won, then I have to give it to Blue Farm, because it won the most amount of tournaments. However, it also had the most amount of entries. So like, I think there's excuses for it kind of either way. Overall, I don't know. I would still think that Timnachrom is the best deck. We could go tit for tat on that all day.
Are there other decks of the summer we can talk about?
I would like to talk about some decks that I was a little bit surprised by.
Yeah.
These are low conversion rates that we're going to be talking about. Decks that were a little bit disappointing this summer here.
All right.
And the first one that I have here is Obnixilus Captive Kingpin, which I was really surprised came out with only a 12.2% conversion rate.
Pretty bad.
To top 16. Yeah,
pretty bad.
It had no wins. If one of those was a win, I would not have been in the disappointment section. But considering that it's just done so not well for how many new tools it's gotten, I was a little surprised to see it so low.
Yeah, it does seem like it would be good. It gives Rakdos kind of exactly what it needs, which is kind of Rhystic Study level card draw right in the command zone, but that's just not enough. You need more colors, more interaction, more brokenness, maybe?
Sometimes you do, I think.
Yeah.
And again, this deck has gotten a lot of new tools, but I don't know how many of them have actually made it into the Commander's 99. You're already like maximized on the number of pingers that you can have, and unless you're like just replacing them, I don't think that the deck's power level just by getting new pingers is really growing a ton.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't enhance that much. You can't have all pingers because you need stuff that actually does something also, right? So I guess that kind of makes sense. You need things that are just inherently more powerful, not things that are like on the same level.
I think you either need more things like Ketoric Parasite, like more ways to consistently be dealing one damage, more Orcish Bowmasters and stuff like that. But I also think that we still need more and better interaction in this color combination too. So until we get those two things, I think that Obnixilus and the rest of the Rakdos decks, that's just where your weakness is going to be in that color pair.
Yep, no counter spells, no silence effects, no way to really protect your ship besides just going for it.
And I know you said towards the beginning of the show that Tivit and Atraxa were a little bit on the lower side. Atraxa didn't have a lot of tournament showings, but did still come out with an over 20% conversion rate to top 16 and no tournament wins.
No wins. What was the conversion rate?
21.88%.
Okay, so just barely over.
Just barely, but still decent.
Yeah.
Still decent.
Playable.
Better than my buddy Kenny. Kenny's only came at 21.43, so like it just eked it out, but Kenny had a lot more entries though too.
Interesting.
Tivit also only had a 14.71% conversion rate
here. I've been saying Tivit sucks. I've been saying that.
We've been saying that for a year and a half.
Tivit sucks.
And it's, and now we're right, yeah.
Tivit also, unfortunately, has the big issue of being a tournament deck and having its win be extra turns when oftentimes the decks will go to time. That kind of sucks for Tivit. That's
that being said, it did win a tournament, though.
It did win, okay.
It did win, yeah.
Atraxa didn't win.
But you can win with any deck if you're a good pilot, so.
Yes, that's true. One win isn't as notable as, like, four wins.
Exactly. Yeah, so Tivit's been on the downswing. Kinnan continuing to go down. Kevin's conversion rate.
Kevin's?
Kevin?
You said Kevin.
I meant to say Kinnan. Oh, shit. Kinnan's conversion rate ended up only being 7.37%.
Less than 10% is heinously bad.
Heinously bad. Yeah, 95 entries and 7 top 16s, 0 tournament wins this time around.
Interesting. Yeah, I think I'm certain players can play Kinnan very well. I think I'm taking Kinnan out of the tier 1 mind block in my head right now. Kinnan, I feel like, is just not doing well.
The two other decks that kind of disappointed me, one of them was Atali, which I guess this was a little bit more expected. Atali came out with like an 11% conversion rate.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Pretty bad. Pretty expected. If you saw this past week's gameplay video, you can see that Atali gets like really high highs.
Yeah.
But Atali also gets really low lows where you mulligan really low, still don't find anything to help power out an early Atali, and then you end up just doing nothing for the game.
Yeah, if you can get a turn 2 Treasonous Ogre, you're in a pretty good shot. If you can't get that, your chance drops dramatically.
Oh, yeah. And then Krom Tevish also had a pretty dramatic drop recently with only having 5 top 16 appearances this summer, bringing its conversion rate down to 14.29%.
Interesting. Yeah. To me, under the 20 is the worrisome zone. Under 15, we start getting into maybe this isn't a tournament CDH deck right now.
Yeah. Maybe it's not its time. Maybe something has to change in the meta, or maybe it's even just the prominent players for certain decks are moving to some of these other decks because of where the meta is shifting to. Maybe there's more people playing Nadu who wouldn't normally be on Nadu, and they're just trying that out.
Yeah, that's true. The CDH metagame is still small enough that it's like individually influenced, right? So like certain players being good will change the numbers for a whole archetypes just because certain players are playing them. That's true in all formats, but I feel like most in CDH is like you see those differences pop up because the sample sizes are still like relatively small-ish.
Yeah, exactly. Which means that you will see a lot of these decks that we've talked about today still grow in popularity because even though they are small, they have seen short-term success. And a lot of times that's when we really want to start experimenting with these decks to see if they actually do have legs. But popularity, again, plays a huge part into it. The more players that pick up the deck then that don't have the experience of these tenured pilots already, that's going to start to bring the numbers back down then too.
What about Sisek? That's a deck that I've been playing recently and for a while had a pretty great conversion rate.
And it still is.
Still doing well?
Yeah, still is 27.46%.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's good.
Still doing excellent there. 39 top 16. Same amount of top 16s as Rog'Sai, actually.
Any wins?
Two wins,
not four wins, like Nadu and Rog'Sai.
Not
two.
Four wins, yeah. Same amount of wins as Kenrith, actually.
Where does it rank? I know it's Vile Smasher, Thrasios number one, Nadu number two, Rog'Sai number three in terms of conversion rate. What's number four?
Krark. Krark the Thumbless at 29. Even though it has less than 30 entries, I'm still going to count it.
What's after that?
And then after that, then I think it's Sisay.
Then it's Sisay. Okay.
Then it's Sisay, yeah. So it's really high in terms of the conversion rate that it's got.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, Sisay's been a great deck. The more I play it, the more I see how powerful it is. There's new lines that I'm finding every single time. I wanted to go through this line with you. I wanted to make sure that this actually makes sense.
Yeah, take it away.
So say I have Emil and Dockside. Say for some reason I don't have access to my commander, so I can't search for whatever I want.
Yeah.
But I have Urtai, the blue-black counter an ability
or
a destroy creature, whatever. Yep. Activate Emil on Dockside, make a billion treasure. I do that. I know that's true. Then can I activate Emil, hold priority, activate Emil again, hold priority, activate Emil again, do that 100 times. Hold priority again on top of those activations, activate Emil on Urtai, flicker Urtai to counter one of the activations, draw a card. While the rest of them are on their stack, flicker the Urtai again to counter an activation, draw card?
Yes, that all sounds right.
Right?
You can do that.
With Urtai, I can use it to draw my whole deck and counter a whole bunch of activations that I don't care about anyway.
Yes, right? I thought that the way you were going to say that was you were going to try to counter something that was no longer on the stack and then try to draw that card. But because you are still putting an ability on the stack and then re-flickering the Urtai,
right, that is where that works.
You are actually going to be countering that ability, which will allow you to draw that card.
So if you need to actually draw through your deck, you can draw through your deck this way.
If you don't have access to Sisse, yeah. And then that way, then you can do whatever you need from there.
If you need to find counter spells or something in response to whatever.
You could do that too.
I just want to make sure.
I mean, you could just win with your Planeswalker line after that then too.
Yeah, you could just use the Urtai to counter the stuff and flicker it and counter whatever they have too.
Also true, yeah. It's wild what you can do with
There's
infinite mana.
There's just so many different things. My favorite one that we put on a Chiltern recently was the Mount Doom line.
Oh, that was so cool.
If you use Emil to flicker the Derevi to flicker the Gaia's Cradle or untap the Gaia's Cradle to make enough mana to go again, you can make infinite green. You can use Derevi to flicker all of your things. And if one of those things is Mount Doom, a legendary permanent that Sisse can find, you can tap it and pay the activation to deal everyone a damage. Use Derevi to untap it and then do it again.
And remind me, there's a line on Sisse that lets you use any mana of any color to activate abilities.
There's a line on Agatha's Soul Cauldron.
That's what it is.
Agatha's Soul Cauldron allows you to also, with its other things, allow you to activate Gaia's Cradle for five colors of mana for Sisse to
That's
go through in that
That's how that works.
Way.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
There's so many overlapping layers and wins, and it's difficult to explain. And sometimes when you're at the table, people think that they did the math, and they go, oh no, Sisse can or can't win from here. And you say, I have an Elvish Spirit Guide in my hand. I actually can win
you
from
can,
here.
Yeah.
Or there's situations like that where you can hold back a little bit of information. The deck is super powerful.
It's fun for me to try to figure out how you're going to win too. And I'm actually really glad that you did put the deck together too, because that was the only way I was going to learn how to play against it, right? But so far, my only strategy is kill the mana creatures that combo,
yeah,
or just keep killing Sisse.
Yeah.
That's the only strategy that I've come up with, but it works when you have consistent removal, but you're not always going to have that.
Right, yeah. It puts everyone at such a weird pressure point, because if they don't interact early, that means that I'll probably find Kutzul or Teferi for a protected win. But
yeah,
if they do interact early, that means that they burn their interaction before I can go through my other win. And you can pivot so quickly to kind of very smally different lines depending on what my opponents have. So when my opponents ask, like, can you win right now? Like, Technically, normally, yes, but it depends on what you do. How I'll win will be completely different.
So the answer to that then is always yes.
Always yes.
I can always win. I can always find something.
I would say normally if there is like, if I can have Dockside or one of the Bloom Tenders or something that taps for a bunch of mana, I can normally put together a win from there. I have to have some stuff in hand, some legendaries with colors for Sisse. Sisse has to have a high enough power. But that's what a lot of the deck is, stuff like that. So normally getting rid of the Bloom Tender, if you can exile the Dockside, that's a great way to get rid of Sisse. Getting rid of the Sisse itself, I'll just cast it again later. It's kind of cheapish, but that can be a way to do it also. But the deck is just super versatile, can win at instant speed with the Mount Doom line and just very, very fun, cool ways.
Yeah, definitely. So these are kind of the highlight decks of the summer of 2024. Now, there is, from when we're filming, there is one more weekend of the summer, and that happens to be the weekend that we have our event at Cloud City up at the Strauss Mall.
Yeah.
So next week's episode is going to be, wait, no, maybe it's 2 weeks from now.
Maybe 2 weeks.
By the time the episode comes out, we'll have a tournament report for that event 2 weeks from the release of this video.
I think it'll be the weekend after this, because the next podcast we're recording is
Right before the event. Yeah, that's why it's 2 weeks, yeah.
I think I'm going to play Sisse.
You think you're going to play Sisse?
Part of me wants to play Timnatana. It's the deck that I know the best, but it's also the deck that I know is not great. I've updated Timnatana. It can be really good against the right pods. I don't think it's particularly good against the metagame right now. I don't think it's great against Nadu. I don't think it's great against Rog'Sai.
Yeah.
It's not particularly great against Blue Farm. What Blood Pod is good against is all those other decks that we talked about. Obnixilis.
All the bad decks.
It's like, I can clean up those decks. I feel much more confident about.
Dude, it feels like Jund, where you're like, I have good matchups against all the bad decks, but right. I can't beat the good ones.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what it feels like a lot of the time.
That's funny.
I'm also playing Sisse Kode. I'm also playing Cody, which also feels very good. The deck is super consistent, but I had two situations the other night at Cloud where I turned two ad nauseum, whiffed on the ad nause. It never happens with Cody. I actually got there. I also had a situation where I hit the wheel and the draw three, drew 10 cards. It was all permanents and lands. It just completely whiffed. So when I'm thinking about decks that have the option to just like whiff on their own, like I do everything right, I set it up perfectly, and I can still whiff. At a tournament, that's just two feel bads for me. I don't want to do that.
No, I hate that. You know I'd much rather be in control of everything.
Right.
And then know that if something went wrong, it was because a mistake that I made that I can learn from. But the most frustrating thing in life for me is when things outside of my control mess stuff up for me.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like someone counters my spell.
Yeah.
Because I could have interaction for that. That's my fault for not having a backup.
Your own interaction, exiling the wrong thing off Demonic Occupation.
Exactly.
Something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but like flipping over the wrong spells or saying food chain with your demonic consultation and then all of your win conditions are exiled along with it too. Like those are the kind of things I want to avoid for tournament settings. So I do not blame you for going with Sisse.
Yeah. Whereas like Sisse, when I'm going for the line with Sisse, if my brain is working, I know I have it or I don't. There's nothing that can, you know, my opponents could have interaction, whatever, but like I can't whiff on the line. I know as long as I play my cards right and I time it perfectly, I know the line works 100%. Ad nauseum usually wins the game. 5% of the time, it doesn't. And if that 5% shows up in a tournament, that's not great.
I flip the table when that happens.
Flip it right over.
Right over.
I start screaming. I make a big mess of my hair. I ruffle myself up.
Here comes a big wave. I'm playing Kenrith. I'm definitely going to play Kenrith again.
Yeah. What are you playing at the tournament?
I'm playing Kenny.
Yeah, Kenpachi.
Yeah, the Kenpachi.
Consistent.
It's been very consistent. I've been loving the upgrades that I put in. I think I'm ready for this meta. So I'm very excited about it.
Extra Toxic Deluge for Nadu.
Yeah,
stuff
I put
like
two
that.
Toxic Deluges two of them in. Yep, an extra Toxic
the same
Deluge.
Art, though, so if you see them both, no one will get confused.
They're both foils that are bent in half. So
I marked them too. I ding them a little bit at the top so I can see them.
Exactly. Yeah, I pull them out and then.
Yeah, don't do that. That's cheating. Don't do that. No, obviously, he's joking.
I'm not doing that. Yeah. Oh, God. Aaron's going to be rooting through my deck looking at all my cards now.
Thanks so much for watching. Are we done?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're done.
Thanks so much for watching or listening. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Insomnia, SC Phillip, Golden Groompy, Gecko 21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Sean in the Ice, Mark Cirillo, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Demon of Rosgrease, Cornell Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Goto 9, Kwaja A. Hamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby Jeebus.
Go to our website. It's playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use our affiliate code PlayToWin5 to get 5% off.
TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram.
Thank you for watching.
Next time.
Roy Turner, Orjan, Mystic Muffin Man, Nick Saxby, Jacob Bauer, Reactive, Tyler Watson, Brian Barrington, Zachary Coulson, Tyler H, X Tyler the Tree X, Mallcraft, Driving Crooner, Jabaha, Dalton Poteet, Hobo Ghost, Justin Man Solo, Jacob Depp, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Attention all small biz owners. At the UPS store, you can count on us to handle your packages with care. With our certified packing experts, your packages are properly packed and protected. And with our pack and ship guarantee, when we pack it and ship it, we guarantee it. Because your items arrive safe or you'll be reimbursed. Visit the upsstore.com/guarantee for full details. Most locations are independently owned. Product services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Come into your local store today.